What you gonna do? Or what you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, bad boys. Or what you gonna do? Or what you gonna do when they come for you?
Cops is filmed on location. As it happens, all suspects are considered innocent until proven guilty in a court of law.
I'm sorry, Daz, I couldn't resist. When you were telling me what song to pick out for this week's intro and you said, oh, the Cops theme, I presume in your mind you meant, oh, just get the, you know, the CD version of the song and don't pick verbatim the intro from the Cop show, but I couldn't resist. I'm like, I gotta have that part where, you know, blah, blah, blah. Something in the court of law. I'm like, that'd been too funny. I have to put that in there. Then you hear all the things from the intro. I couldn't resist.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a lot of memories of Cops because, when I was a kid, we always, on a Saturday night, my parents always used to bring back pizza and we always used to sit and watch Cops because Cops were always on in like a Saturday evening.
Mm-hmm.
And we loved it. It was amazing.
I don't understand how you could sit there and watch a bunch of episodes of it, but we've seen like with Spike, and I think when G4 over here was still on the air, you would have marathons of that, and it would do if not the regular station average, if not a little bit higher. So
yeah,
folks are fond of police.
Yeah.
That actually ties into what we're going to be talking about sort of in this week's comic, obviously. How can I put this? On the Comic Couch Radio, is that what we're going to call this show, Dazza?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We had a bit of a discussion about it last night. I think Laura asked, why'd you change the name of it? I'm like, well, that's what Dad is calling his articles, and this is the podcast that talks about what he talks about in his article, so why not, right?
Exactly, yeah. I found out that apparently there's quite a few shows out there already called, what did I call the other one? Comic Therapy Sessions. That's already been taken, so I thought we're on a new site now, so refreshing everything and a bit of a different title.
Excellent. So if you don't already know, I am Fetman, and I'm speaking with our buddy Dazza, and we are here today to talk his recent article on halfguarded.com, and if you haven't already checked, it's in the description for it on halfguarded.com. But we are talking Martial Law, the UK comic. Isn't that right, Dazza?
Not quite.
Oh.
I mean, we are talking about Martial Law, but it's actually not a UK comic.
Oh, it's not? I'm surprised.
No. It's actually created by UK guys. It's created by Pat Mills and Kevin O'Neill, who were big sort of like 2000 AD guys. But the actual comic originally was published by Marvel. And it was actually, Marvel did a new line of comics called Epic Comics. and these were basically... it started off as basically a creator-owned series.
Oh, okay.
So basically, I think basically it was sort of in the 90s and they were like, comics were changing and they were experimenting a bit. So they decided to do their own comic line away from the Marvel Universe. And to get basically some new creative guys in there, they offered that if you created, you know, for them, you kept the rights to your characters.
Oh, okay. That explains why you're mentioning all these characters and I'm like, well, they're doing this thing right now, Secret Wars, where they're doing all this thing where they're trying to tie in all the properties that they own and try to do something with. But if you're telling me this is creator-owned, I can see why maybe they'd be kind of leery on making this part of that storyline.
Well, yeah, I mean, Marvel don't actually own Martial Law anymore. So, to creators, that's going to be something that was like, you know, really hit them home. The fact that they could basically create, you know, these characters and keep them. And most of them were sort of like, sci-fi, comedy. There was a character called, Gru. I don't know if you've ever seen, but he was like a cartoon character, like a Viking type character, which was really popular for a long time. And it was basically, it wasn't a massive seller, the line, but it created some like, you know, really new vibrant stuff. And another thing that they did as well, they used to get, reprints from other countries.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the, Akira, the Japanese,
now legendary, manga.
Marvel actually republished that on the Epic comics line. So they basically sort of, you know, but you know, it was just something that they did, and it wasn't a commercial success, but it was something that basically, you know, had a lot of like interesting, you know, stuff and a lot of, you know, variety. And Martial Law was basically got its start on the Epic comic line. So it was actually, it's got its roots in Britain. It's a very British comic, but it was actually sort of created, you know, it was actually published by the American market.
Okay, cool. I didn't know that.
Hmm. So yeah, so it was basically martial law, and it's it was basically originally Pat Mills, because there was a bit of, in the 90s, there was a bit of a British invasion.
Mm-hmm.
Of the US comic scene, because they were basically, the US were basically looking for like new talent and stuff. And a lot of British creators were basically very, you know, disenfranchised with the British comic market. You know, there were a lot of disputes about ownership over characters, mm-hmm. ownership over artwork and that sort of thing. So, and basically there was a lot of money, you know, to be made in America. So that's how your likes of your Alan Moore, your Neil Gaiman, your Grant Morrison, that sort of thing. They basically sort of went over there. And Pat Mills and Kevin O'Neill got there, and they basically brought to Marvel a character that they created called Martial Law. And originally he was going to be a... So it was basically going to be like in a post-op... can't even say it, apocalyptic world, like a Mad Max type character. But what actually happened is that while Marvel were basically, they basically accepted they were going to do this comic, but while they were sort of like, you know, waiting to basically sort of launch and everything, the comic scene started to change. And at that time, that's when you had the Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah, I was about to say, this line from Marvel sort of came as an answer to what DC was doing, so.
Yeah, I think it came a little bit before, but yeah, it was kind of when comics were basically sort of changing quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea, basically, when Watchmen and Dark Knight came out, Pat Mills got the idea of basically, you know, because superheroes became, you know, relevant and at least the American market, and exciting again.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Alan Moore will sort of basically say, I once saw an interview with Alan Moore where he was saying that they weren't trying to revitalize superheroes. They were actually trying to put the nail in the coffin. As it was, you know, but which I don't think they actually did. I think they actually helped revitalize those superheroes.
But from reading your article, a lot of this series seems to be, you know, trying to quell the whole superhero phenomenon and try to tell maybe different stories, right?
Yeah. I mean, and this is where Pat Mills basically got his idea to turn it into a superhero comic. But the thing was, Pat Mills, along with a lot of other British creators, hated superheroes with a passion, and he never wanted to actually do like a superhero comic. However, he came up with the idea that if he could basically turn martial law into a superhero hunter, a guy who actually policed the superheroes, he could basically, you know, get a lot out of his system of, you know, what he hated about superheroes. So he could basically have martial law, you know, beating up the superheroes in the storyline. But at the same time, he could also basically be attacking what he hated about superheroes, and also parodying them, make fun of them, that sort of thing. And that's how martial law, that was basically the concept. And surprisingly, Marvel were basically okay with this, which was, you know, a surprise, you know, because they were basically, I think one of the things is, one of the main bad guys was a character called the Public Spirit.
Yes.
Who is very much a Superman character. I mean, he's even got, if you look on the way he's drawn, he's even got like the little curl
mm-hmm.
in his hair, you know. So it was very much like, you know, a Superman parody, basically.
But then he's also got the Star Spangled Banner thing on his costume. So it's mainly, you look at it and you think Superman, but then also a little bit of Captain America, I'm sure, is thrown in there too for added effect.
Yeah. And so the story is that he is in this world that basically, there's basically superheroes, but all the superheroes were pretty much created to fight in this war, in this place in South America called the Zone.
Mm-hmm.
And so, all the superheroes, they're either basically veterans of this war, so they're sort of like, you know, very disturbed, and they've basically come back and they form like street gangs and stuff. So basically, it's all set in San Francisco after the big earthquake that's come, and so the whole whole city's carved up into different territories by the different gangs of superheroes. Because they call them superheroes, even though they're not. So these gangs of vigilantes. And it's so you've got those, and you've also got sort of like the elite superheroes, like the Public Spirit, who are sort of all the glamorous ones, who are all loved, almost like a royal family as such.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like I said, the Marshal is basically, he's basically paid to basically police the superheroes.
Yeah, when I was reading your article, I couldn't understand if martial law was there to just hunt down superheroes because he had this resentment for them, or he specifically was policing them, and I wasn't sure with that.
He was policing them. That is the thing. But at the same time, he was also basically hunting. He was basically like hunting them down when they were criminals. But his official job was basically was to police the superhero community.
But basically his job was to be a policeman, but when they would do something they weren't supposed to do, he took great pleasure in taking them down.
Oh yeah, I mean he basically it's almost an extension of Pat Mills himself. He basically hates superheroes. And because he's actually, technically he's one himself, because he's basically a veteran of the Zone. And that's where his character sort of comes in. Is the reason why he hates the public spirit so much is that he basically signed up because basically they've got it. And again, this is, you're right about the Captain America thing. They're in this storyline, the public spirit is basically did a lot of like propaganda to basically get people to recruit, to sign up for as superheroes to fight in this Zone. So which is kind of like what the Captain America originally, in the comics was sort of made to be like. It was kind of like, a patriotic sort of figure. And he basically, he goes to fight in the Zone, and he basically resents the public spirit for basically what he sees as basically betraying all the people who signed up for it and betraying like sort of the American dream and everything. And so that's why he basically hates the public spirit. And that's why he signs on for a job to basically take out, all the superheroes. And he's got this tagline. And when he goes into battle, he always says that he's a superhero hunter and that he hunts superheroes, but he hasn't found any yet.
Ooh, because basically, burn. Yeah. That's good. That's a good line. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. But, the reason why I sort of wrote this article is that he's kind of been sort of, for me, he was very big at the time. It was kind of like this like real cult following, because it was sort of, it was when what was starting to become now known as the dark age of superheroes, when you had over sort of like, the Punisher and, those sort of type of heroes. And he was sort of like a really, had like a real cult following. But he's since sort of been forgotten. And whereas sort of like, the comics of like sort of Watchmen and V for Vendetta and Dark Knight, they've basically become sort of seen as like, sort of classics. Martial Law sort of like was really big, and then just seemed to like sort of disappear for a time. And I'll be honest, I'd sort of forgotten about him as well. It weren't until when I was doing my articles on the British comic scenes, I was looking at Pat Mills's back catalogue.
Uh-huh.
And I noticed Martial Law, and I've sort of realised I'd totally forgotten about it. I've got like, a graphic novel of the first series.
Yeah, you even bring up in the article, you're like, well, I sort of had vague memories of Martial Law, but I didn't think anything of it. And then I did done some investigation, and I realized there's some really good stories here.
Yeah. I mean, I I've got the graphic novel, and I do sort of like, remember it really, really well, because it was something that I sort of, at the time it blew me away, because it actually got released in the UK in an anthology strip called Strip. And it was basically a bit like the Epic line. It was published by Marvel, but it was basically all sort of stuff from around the world, also to like, from independent sources. So it was like sort of like an anthology, almost a bit like sort of the French magazine Heavy Metal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool!
And Martial Law was basically the main story in this series. It was like the big selling point. I remember seeing the first pictures of it, and I was thinking, what the hell is this guy? Because the pictures I saw, you couldn't really tell what he actually was. Because he had this sort of like, it's almost like gimp outfit on, with this sort of like, this like red face around his lipstick. And you couldn't tell, whether that was actually his face or just a costume and everything. Uh-huh. And then when I actually read it, I mean, in the first installment, and I actually go into this, you're basically seeing like a female superhero, basically a hooker dressed as a female superhero, being stalked and then attacked and then raped by by the main villain of it called the Sleep Man, which is one of the freakiest characters I ever came across in comics at that time. He's basically got this like sort of, he's like black claws, and he has a bag over his head, and when he talks, he's sort of, the speech bubbles around him are always in grey, and they've always got like sort of like a jagged curve around them and everything. So you can actually sort of like envision his voice being quite sinister and everything.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. And the actual, and he basically, and he basically kills this sort of like, you know, this prostitute. And it's just, from there it was like, God, this is amazing. It was, you know, and actually sort of, you know, the violence in it and stuff, and the actual, you know, the sexual connotations and everything. I mean, in it, the superheroes are kind of like a fetish.
Yeah, I think
there's basically brothels in there, which are basically where the hookers are all dressed as like super heroines and everything. You know, and it's just an amazingly imaginative comic. But it didn't catch the sort of psyche like, you know, Watchmen and Dark Knight did. And I think, you know, and I sort of went over this in the articles. One of the things why I think it sort of like, you know, deserves looking at again is, whereas those comics, they were sort of like trying to basically either expand on superhero comics and sort of, you know, take them to like, you know, a different level, or in the case of Watchmen, where basically use superheroes to tell, you know, different stories. Martial Law is actually about superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's basically got superheroes as a character. But Pat Mills, like I say, he was basically wanting to parody superheroes, you know, and spoof them. And so it is basically, a superhero comic, which is actually about the genre and, you know, all the sort of everything that they sort of, you know, what Pat Mills hated about the genre. Because Pat Mills, you know, in interviews and that, he actually says that he hates superheroes. He sees them as sort of like, Jack Boots of authority. And if you ever read sort of like a lot of sort of Pat Mills, you know, he is very much a very anti-authority type person. You know, always sort of, you know, that's the theme. He's very much, you know, his heroes in it are quite anarchists and that sort of thing. And so it is, like I say, it is, you know, a superhero comic. And I think that's probably why it didn't sort of catch on with sort of a wider audience. Because if you read it at first glance, it basically looks like an extravagant superhero comic.
Okay.
You know, and but there is, you know, there is so much more going on in there. And I actually think that for anyone who sort of is wanting to write about superheroes, Martial Law is a good one to go to, because it basically tackles a lot of the themes. You know, it tackles a lot of the attitudes to women in superhero comics, attitudes to violence and everything. And it parodies the whole thing. And it's just like, you know, it's something that sort of like rereading it now, I can see a lot of really, really good stuff in there, mm-hmm. You know, and sort of, and by reading it again, I've noticed a lot of things. And you can actually sort of like, you know, read a lot into it. Like the fact that, you know, something, I could be totally wrong on this sort of thing, but the actual fact that you've got the two main protagonists are, you've got the Martial Law, who's kind of like your sort of your gun-toting, violent, Punisher type.
I was about to say, he's essentially the Punisher.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, and in fact, actually, he shares a few things with the Punisher, because like, the Punisher was a Vietnam veteran.
Mm-hmm.
And Martial Law was a veteran of the zone, you know, so they do have that sort of, you know, that violence sort of, you know, and the actual, he does actually, believe it or not, in his superhero, his alter ego, he actually does look a bit like Frank Castle, slightly. Whoa. He's got sort of like, you know, the short dark hair and everything, and he's sort of like a muscular without being sort of, like a steroid looking type superhero, you know, it looks like a sort of, you know, an everyman type thing. So it does kind of resemble him a little bit. I mean, I don't know if that played a part in his design with Pat Mills or not. I don't know. But yeah, so that is, you know, Martial Law. And the first, it was originally in a 6-issue limited series. And that series is really good. I mean, there's sort of like there's a whole detectives type story in there where he's trying to track down a sleep man who he believes is the public spirit.
Ah.
That is, you know, that is the main thing. But there's actually a twist in there, which I'm not going to reveal, because the twist is absolutely mind blowing. If you read the whole thing,
oh, and damn it, now I gotta read this.
Yeah, but the great thing about it is, because I had a friend who was into comics back at the time, and I basically told him, you know, the twist, and he says, if you look back, you can actually see that they've basically, you know, they set the whole thing up. And there's clues all along the way, which you basically don't pick up on the first time. But when you read it again, you see, oh, you know, in fact, there's one page where it practically tells you who the Sleep Man is. Mm. But the first time you read it, you totally sort of, you know, miss it. But it's when you read it, it's glaringly there. It's a really, I really have a lot of time for this book. There's really a lot in there. And it does have its roots in that British type, 2000 AD sort of, you know, type story. The thing is although the first six issues were absolutely awesome, And there's a real lot of imaginative storytelling, and there's a lot of sort of social satire in there and everything, because there's lots of stuff about sort of, you know, well, actually, there's the stuff that was touched upon, which I think if you actually were to, like, you know, go again with it today, we could get even more out of, because there's a lot about, you know, the zone about sort of, like, you know, the American involvement in other countries. Oh, and when okay. The zone was on, it was harking back to the old Vietnam days. Now, of course, since then, we've had over stuff that happens in the Middle East with Iraq, so you could get a lot more out of that nowadays.
It's still very timely, is what you said.
Yeah.
If not more than ever.
Yeah. But there's also something which is, I think, has sort of probably sort of exploded even more, and which I don't think you could have foreseen back then, is the whole celebrity culture that we have nowadays. And I mean, you just look on TV and, like, you know, the obsession with people like, you know, the Kardashians and that sort of thing. And we've sort of, like, you know, the private lives of sports stars and how we idolize them. And I think there's sort of, you know, in the original comic, that's only just touched upon slightly. Whereas now you could basically sort of base an entire, superhero, you know, a martial law type storyline totally around that.
Speaking of that, didn't you say they recently, maybe not recently, but a couple of years after the original running, they tried to bring it back and it just wasn't the same?
Well, what they did is not so long after that, because the first series had a cult following, they basically did a follow-up, but rather than do like an ongoing series, they basically did like a one-shot.
Oh, okay.
But basically a series of one-shots, the idea. The one shots, they're kind of funny, but they're basically, each one parodies a particular sort of superhero character. Mm-hmm. So the first one was basically parodied pretty much the entire Marvel universe. And they had basically parodies of all the Marvel universe characters in like an insane asylum. And yeah,
that's good. That's really. And is this the same writer that did the original Pat Mills?
Yeah. Basically, oh, okay. One of the reasons why you've not had that many out of the years is basically the character is basically owned by Pat Mills and Kevin O'Neill. So they've basically taken it from Marvel onto other companies.
Oh.
Yeah. So I think the first one they did was basically while we were with Marvel. And there's a character in there who's I forgot what we call the character, but basically he's a parody of the Punisher.
Nah.
And he's basically wanting, he's been hunted by...
He's been hunted by martial law.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that's good.
Yeah. But the thing is, he's trying to get accepted into the insane asylum with all the other Marvel characters, because he can basically sort of say, I'm insane, you can't touch me sort of thing. But they won't, it's a long time ago since I read it, but they basically won't let him in. And the marshal basically ends up storming the insane asylum and basically ends up killing the entire Marvel Universe characters. Turns out none of them actually have powers, they just think they do.
That's even better.
Because there's this scene where they all jump out the window at the end, all trying to fly, and the car, and they all basically sort of land on the ground and basically just all splatter into, like, limbs and everything. There is one that I remember, and I don't know if it's a Spider-Man parody or something, but one of them, as he's flying through the air, he tries to catch on to a flagpole. And as he does, he catches on to a flagpole, but basically he keeps falling, so his arms rip off.
Oh!
So he's falling, he's basically got no arms, and his arms are basically still stood on the flagpole.
Oh, that's gruesome.
Yeah. But, yeah, and then after that, he did another parody, which was basically on Batman. Mm-hmm. And this one, the character was called the Private Eye. and the gag was that he was basically going around as this character called the Private Eye. But everybody knew his secret identity because it was so obviously him. So it was basically like a Bruce Wayne character. And everyone basically knew that he was basically had to be the Private Eye. But they played around a lot with the, cause he was always basically talking about how his parents had killed. Well, in this storyline, and it is very much Batman. You don't even have to be sort of like a fan of comics to basically recognize, you know, that it is a parody of Batman. And in this storyline, it was actually, the Alfred character who killed Batman's parents.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, because the idea was that Batman's parents were basically real shits. They were sort of like scientists, and they had him as some sort of like social experiment. So they were always basically doing social experiments on it. And basically Alfred was loyal to young Master, you know, wasn't Master Wayne, but whoever he was basically.
Yeah,
you know.
The composite character was supposed to be Batman, yeah.
And so he basically killed the two parents so that the Batman character could basically inherit the whole you know, estate and everything. But another thing, see, this is the thing which is sort of that Pat Mills and Kevin O'Neill actually admit. And in some ways, it sort of made the stories afterwards not as intelligent or fun. But at the same time, it basically amped up the crude humor. Is that they basically pretty much said that they were seeing how far they could push the envelope. So they were basically going as sort of like as disgusting and gross as they come with each season, with each series. Because one of the storylines in the Batman one, the Private Eye, is that he kept having these, he kept going to this orphanage to get in like, to get a sidekick. Mm-hmm. So he would be, any psychic would be like the new Robin type character. But the gag was that all his psychics would die really, really quickly after sort of training with him for so long. Uh-huh. You know, they'd go out on a mission and he'd die. It turned out that he was basically, deliberately getting them killed because he, to basically keep himself youthful, he was basically harvesting their organs. Yeah.
I thought we were going to go in the direction of, well, he's killing the parents so he can, you know, send them to the orphanage so he can use them as his sidekick. But that's even more gruesome.
Yeah. So he's basically sort of like, you know, using their lungs and hearts and things so he can keep himself healthy. So he can basically keep going on these crusades and everything.
Oh, geez, that's a tough pill to swallow, Daz. I'm not going to lie. Maybe that specific one I'll skip, but.
I mean, but it's done in a very sort of, you know, cartoony way. It's sort of that's the thing. The sort of, because of the artwork, it's sort of quite bright and cartoony and everything. It manages to basically be sort of like, you know, funny without getting too dark. But unfortunately, the sort of, like I said, the series afterwards, they basically started, I mean, they admit that Marshall Lorg became basically a whore because they basically took him to every sort of company. To do, you know, do stuff. He went to Image, he went to Dark Horse, and they would basically do sort of like, you know, storylines with them all. And like I said, the first six issues, I think is great. It's got a great story. It makes some great intelligent points in that. But after that, it became more about basically just bashing certain superheroes.
Oh, okay. So in the sense, it was kind of clever and unique in the first six issues, but then after a while when they started, you know, marketing it for all the companies, it just came off just, you know, it was still fun, but it was still at the same time, it's just, it wasn't as subtle anymore. It was just completely over the top. We're going to bash superheroes.
Yeah. And it was so well, so, because the first one, it was quite subtle on who the targets were, but in these, in these, it was very much definitely, right, now we're going to take the piss out of Superman, or now we're going to take the piss out of Batman and that sort of thing. And so the sort of, you know, the subtlety and the social, you know, the satire, it wasn't, you know, as strong. It was basically just sort of doing parodying of certain superhero.
Nice.
And again, they sort of, you know, it became more about, you know, the gross humor, you know, seeing how gross they could basically make, you know, because British humor is very dark anyway. A lot of it is, you know, and they was basically sort of trying to see how far they could go. but they still own the rights to it. Every so often, a new martial law comic, you know, will come along. There was like a 2000 AD one, and they did keep it going by, they were doing like, crossovers with characters from other companies. So there was a crossover with The Mask. There was a crossover with Savage Dragon from, I think that's an Image character.
I'm surprised they'd be cool with that, because that sort of just flies in the face of everything that they believe.
Yeah. But, you know, they were sort of like, you know, they were keeping the character going along. They had a crossover with Pinhead. Awesome. From the Hellblazer films. Mm-hmm. Or is it Hellraiser? One of the two. You know, so it went around, and it sort of, you know, it just became more sort of like a gimmick. And also that the actual character of the Marshal didn't really seem to go in any place. In the first series, there's actually quite a lot to the character. Mm-hmm. And in his alter ego, basically in the sort of the later series, he hardly ever sort of like even, you know, gets a look in. Whereas in the original 6-issue series, he basically had like a really good, backstory and everything. And he also had a good relationship with, in the first 6-issue series, he had a girlfriend called Lynn, who was this radical, student.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing was, she basically, she was basically always writing, essays on superhero culture, which is kind of like another way of Pat Mills was basically highlighting, you know, some of the, you know, the things that he hated about, you know, superhero comics. And because they actually sort of like have her sort of narrating some of the stories through her essays and stuff. But the twist was that she absolutely hated martial law.
Oh.
Yeah, because obviously she didn't know his superhero identity.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's this one scene where she's talking about superheroes, and he says to her, oh, well, what do you think of martial law, the guy who, you know, polices those superheroes? And she says, oh, God, he's the worst of them all. And there's like this sort of, like, it's really subtle. There's this, like, look on his face. It's like sort of kind of disappointed little look about him. And she also makes a comment as well about his outfit. At one point, she actually says, you know, anyone who wears an outfit like that, it's got to be gay.
Okay, that's good. Yeah. That's really good.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, that's, at the time, something that blew me away was she basically becomes a victim of the Sleep Man.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Which again brings sort of like a little bit more of a sort of like the rival, you know, a personal rivalry between him and his villain. And it's real, at the time, it was like really one of the most horrific scenes. Ooh. I'd ever read in a comic. But it was very, see, this is the thing, where it was horrific, but it wasn't explicit. It was basically, you sort of saw him like attacking her, and then the kind of, the artwork kind of started to, almost like, you know, in a film, if you're watching a film, how the camera will pan away from the scene.
Yeah.
The drawings did that. So you'd have sort of like a close up, and then each panel would basically like pulling away and pulling away. So it was leaving you more to imagination of what was going on.
That's good.
It was sort of like horrific at the time, because it was this like character that you sort of, you know, got to know. And then she was basically meeting this like absolutely horrible end, you know, but it is a very dark book. It's, apart from the actual, you know, the violence and everything, which is sort of done in a sort of very, you know, superhero light, but, you know, satirical way, the actual, you know, the comic at the end, no one comes out of it really well. You know, the Marshal's basically stuck being sort of, you know, in this role as, you know, you know, in the eternal sort of like, you know, policeman to this whole superhero community. And the, it turns out that all the crimes that the public spirit has committed are all going to be covered up.
Oh.
You know, there's, you know, so this kind of, and there's a lot in there about sort of like, you know, the whole idea of like heroes and everything. There's one line which always sticks with me where the martial law's boss, the policeman, makes a comment about how you have to,
just give us the gist of it. You have to do it for me.
The gist of it is that basically you've got to stick to, you've got to let us have our fantasy because reality is basically too much to bear. You know, and that's sort of how, but you know, the series ends. It's basically that, they're basically going to cover up everything that's happened. So it is a very dark comedy, but it is one that I think is worth people, you know, seeking out. And because recently, a couple of years ago, they actually did a, in fact, funnily enough, it was DC that, that published it, you know, cause they, rather strangely. And it was basically a compilation of pretty much all of the Marvel, martial law stories, apart from the ones which had characters, like the Pinhead and the Mask and that sort of thing. You know, the ones which had rights to other companies. So it's pretty much everything else though. And it is basically a comic that I think, you know, you can get a lot out of it by reading it about satirizing superheroes. And it does make you think about, you know, what it is that you're actually, you know, you are reading.
Huh, that sounds interesting. If anything, I have to go out of my way to try to find that first, six issue series, cause that sounds awesome.
Yeah. It was, I mean, you can actually, that was collect, I mean, I've got one right here, a graphic novel collection of that. So you can probably, you might be able to like get like a secondhand one or something, but
I'll see if I can't hunt down a copy of it and maybe, post a link in the description if, folks want to read this as well.
Yeah. But you can, like say, you can actually get the complete version in a hardback form. It's only a couple of years ago, so you can get a hold of it. But I think it is a really worthwhile comic. And it does, you know, there is a lot in there when you read, you know, when you're reading it about sort of, you know, stuff. I mean, just little subtle things like all the superheroes, how all of them these like, you know, massive, like wrestlers type physiques. And it does actually sort of show, it does turn out that a lot of them are actually using steroids and stuff.
Oh.
You know, but yeah, there's one character called She Beast.
Yeah. Who's that supposed to be?
But, you know, I mean, it's very obviously like sort of like, you know, like She-Hulk.
Uh-huh.
She's almost like a Bridget. If you remember Bridget Nielsen when she had like the really, really sort of like, you know, like this, you know, the really big physique.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, it's kind of like that. She admits to taking steroids and stuff, but she takes them to such a level that she's actually got like sort of, you know, facial hair and stuff.
Yeah,
like
a mustache or something or a beard.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, that's sort of like, I think Pat Mills there is sort of like, you know, showing that they sort of even in superhero, your regular superhero comics, even when you've got a character like, say, like a She-Hulk or someone like that, even when they have a sort of like super muscular, they always have them looking like glamorous as well.
Yeah, it's not done like, especially in the example of She-Hulk, it's like gun kind of, you know, she's still muscular, but she's still feminine. And then I get the feeling in this instance of She-Beast where it's done almost to, if I have to think of a modern equivalent to like maybe a Cyborg, Chris Cyborg.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Who actually get, I know I'm on message boards, I was just talking about MMA, she gets a lot of comments about her appearance as well.
Oh, really? You know?
Yeah, yeah. In fact, even certain journalists when she was, I do remember when she was in the crowd once for one of the fights, and they sort of there was a journalist who basically quite a prominent one who basically made comment about the fact that she you know, she'll never be a big star because she's not attractive in the same way, because at the time it was all Gina Carano.
Mm-hmm.
And you basically made a comment about how she wasn't, she basically wasn't going to be a big star because she basically wasn't attractive in that sort of like, you know, in a feminine sense.
Mm-hmm.
you know, despite the fact that she sort of like, you know, at the time could have been like sort of, you know, being a completely dominant athlete in her division, you know, the fact that she wasn't sort of like considered sort of like, you know, attractive meant that she wasn't marketable, that sort of thing. And yet, and coming up, you know, if that fight ever does happen with Ronda Rousey, you know, that could be basically, you know, one of the biggest fights, well, so probably the biggest fight in women's MMA history.
Not just that, just MMA history, period.
Oh yeah, it could be, yeah.
All right. Okay. For this next segment, normally we talk to Dazza what he's doing in his next article or what we're going to do the next show on. But then we also kind of, after that, we talk what Dazza's been reading as of late. Usually it's more modern stuff. But today we're merging both of those segments because what you're reading as of late is also what you're going to be doing. We're going to be talking on our next show, right?
Yeah. Basically, I've been reading a series that I never actually read when it was out, and it's basically Captain Britain.
Ah,
and I
nice.
Thought I would actually have a read of this because while I was doing the other pieces for the on British comics history, I realised that I'd never even, you know, read Captain Britain, and I thought I'd basically go with that and revisit it because I managed to get my hands on some graphic novels, and so far I've read the first one. And it's basically when Marvel sort of launched this character as a, you know, as a British superhero. And it's interesting, shall we say. So I don't know if I'm going to do an article on it, because I didn't read it at the time. And because I think sort of a lot of the articles that I do are very much, you know, sort of my feelings of when I was reading them at the time and when they were out. So I think we'll probably just do a show, you know, talking about basically, you know, the Captain Marvel, the Captain Britain character.
Fine by me.
Okay. Rather than doing an article.
My only recommendation is, and I know I've said that we've talked about this before the other day, you have to read the new series from Secret Wars, Captain Britain and the Mighty Defenders.
Yes. Yes. I'm going to try and
you have not
down.
Read that. And at the end, like I said, it's kind of an okay book, but then it's at the end, we get this big reveal. And it's amazing. You're going to want to read that, if not just for that big reveal. Try to go out of your way to not pick up the variant cover. The variant cover kind of spoils it. So if at the very least, when we do the show next week, we can talk what you've been reading from Captain Britain. I'll try to do some research too, so I can bring something to the show. And then, but exclusively, I want you to read that issue. I'm giving you that little bit of homework. You can tell me whatever I need to read for the show, but if I'm going to contribute in one way, I'm going to have you read that one issue. Yeah. Just for the finale, at least, or at least the payoff in that one issue.
Okay. I will try and track that down, man.
Okay. All right. I think that's going to do it then. We've talked your main article. We talked what we're going to be doing next week. And, you said you read Secret Wars, the new one, issue 5 that came out this week, but you said you didn't really have much to say about it. Cause to be honest, even when we did our proper comic conversation show, we said there was really no real big takeaway on that.
No, it just kind of was like it felt like it was explaining how they got a little bit to there. It didn't really move the story on very much. I read it and was kind of, yeah, okay, but I didn't really, you know, get much out of it, to be honest. It was okay. It wasn't bad. And it sort of filled in a few gaps, you know, cause I'd not actually been reading, a lot of the Avengers stuff up to this point.
Okay.
So, you know, so it was okay, but there wasn't anything that really I was that excited about. I bought Howard the Duck as well, but I've not read that yet.
Yeah. How are the duck delivers in a big way? What did you buy, the recent one, or are you buying from the beginning?
I bought the one I bought the other day was the one that came out last week.
Oh, okay. You're gonna enjoy that. I guarantee you that.
But we're talking about what I've been reading. I've been, last week I mentioned that I was reading, Howard the Duck, the original Gerber series.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so I've been sort of like reading like, one issue in it, a night. And that is really hitting its stride.
Okay. Yeah. Let me know when
first few issues kind of sort of took a little bit, getting going where we're sort of building up the character. But now it's just a really great book, you know.
Go ahead, Toad, sorry.
Yeah, again, it's sort of, it, you know, there's quite a bit like a bit of, you know, social satire in there and stuff and a few, you know, that sort of thing. But yeah, that is really hitting its stride. I can see why that sort of has lasted its as long as it has.
Let me know when you want to talk about that one, because I know that one specifically. I mean, the literal Marvel kind of just said, well, we don't, you know, we're not going to come on the show because it's basically just the Dazza hour. So right. We didn't feel like we bring that much. But when we talk Howard the Duck, especially the original stuff, I guarantee you Lurro's going to want to talk that.
Yeah, so, there is some really good stuff. And it sort of, it ties into the culture of the time. I mean, there's one episode which was like a, because in the 70s, the, martial arts film, mm-hmm. you know, became a big thing. And there's an episode in that where he basically takes up martial arts, you know, and it's just, you can tell that the guy basically, Gerber, had sort of just such freedom, you know, to pretty much do what he wanted. So he's basically Howard the Duck basically just, you know, walking through, you know, our society with his girlfriend. And I absolutely, you know, and you can tell it, you know, you can see that he's basically, as it with each issue, Gerber, you can tell he was basically hitting his stride and knowing what the character was. But yeah, I'm really enjoying that one.
That sounds great. I can't wait for the Captain Britain show next week and then somewhere down the line doing the Howard the Duck show.
Yeah.
So,
definitely.
So that's something to look forward to, all of our listeners at halfguard.com. So I think that's going to do it for this week's show. So from all of us at halfguard.com, thanks for checking out the show. And as always, see you guys next week. Bye.
See ya.
I do. Cool. You're my partner.
Shut up, man.
Slow ass driver.
Driving like a bitch.
Why I got to be all that?
Slow ass.
I'll take me and you off this fucking cliff. Keep fucking with me.
Yeah.
All right? Then it'll be what? Two bitches in the sea, huh? Is that it? Is that what you want?
Shut up, man.
My wife, no, I ain't no bitch. I'm a bad boy.
Bad boys, bad boys. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come?